Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of Lisa and Phil Ruin the Movies with me, Lisa Schmeiser.
And also me, Philip Michaels.
Now, which one of us is hosting?
We're both hosting.
Egalitarian!
It is.
It's a partnership.
I've been thinking about it. You know, it's a partnership. We're co-hosting.
Oh my gosh, this is the most exciting thing that's happened to me in the past half hour.
And I like to think of myself more as the star of the show rather than the host. But go on.
That's adorable.
Co-host.
You just think of whatever you want.
Okay.
Like a star.
I will.
Perhaps a black dwarf.
The star of the show.
Gradually going up, sucking.
Name above the title. Name in the title.
Black star, mm-hmm. Black dwarf. Mm-hmm. Sucking things. All right. Anyway, what are we talking about today on Phil and Lisa and Lisa and Phil in the Movies?
Well, speaking of stars, mm-hmm. Lisa.
Yes, Phil.
You and I actually, as listeners know, I don't watch many movies in the theater, mm-hmm. but I actually went to the movies recently and saw Minions,
now,
which we are not talking about.
Let's explain how we came to see Minions.
Yes, we have a child.
Yes.
Our child is of the movie-going age. And
we didn't want to take her to see Inside Out because that would make us have feelings.
Why are Mommy and Daddy crying?
Would be the question that we'd mm-hmm. have to answer. So we thought, if we take her to see Minions, this is low investment on our end because we don't care if we have to walk out of the movie or not.
Yep.
We just want to see how our daughter does in the movie. The answer is she did just fine.
Yep. She was great. Mm-hmm. Minions is adequate.
She wants to be Scarlet Overkill, she says.
Because okay. Not the takeaway message I think the Minions producers were going for.
But our daughter's takeaway message is that the female antagonist has the coolest stuff and a clear life focus, and she always admires that in others. Okay. So, Scarlet Overkill. You heard it here first.
Well, there you go. But they...
They have previews.
They show previews. Mm-hmm. And, you know... The attitude towards previews in movies these days is, hey, if you fell for coming to this movie, you'll also want to go see these. It's like
it's affinity, yeah. It's like a recommendations engine.
You are not gonna go to see Minions and here is the trailer
for the Eddie Redmayne Becomes a Woman movie that's coming out in the middle of the award season.
I was gonna go for the I'm blanking on the movie. That's the
because you're so thrown by that dude from Les Miserables becoming a Danish transgendered person.
He was in Les Miserables?
Yes.
Where the hell have I been? I actually saw that movie.
I know you did. He was the boring sap that marries Cosette?
No.
Yes.
No, he's Marius?
Yes.
Oh, that is, yeah, okay.
Yes, and then there's the dude from Briggs, who's,
Yeah, he's...
And we should explain, that show is actually called Graceland, although we rechristened it Briggs, because it seemed like every character spent their time screaming this character Briggs' name mm-hmm. constantly. Anyhoodle, yes, Eddie Redmayne was Marius in Les Miserables, and now he is playing one of the pioneering transgender people of the Scandinavian countries.
Well, good for him.
But we didn't
Academy
see that.
Academy Award winner.
We didn't see that.
No, they
that
don't show that before Minions.
No, because there'd be, I think there'd be questions. So, we did see some other trailers, though.
Yes, including one for Gem and the Holograms, which is going to be a movie.
Apparently it is.
Yes.
Horrifying trailer, I would add.
Yes. Well, I've done some research.
Okay. You have to understand, Gem and the Holograms kind of came after my era.
Yes, it just missed you.
Yeah.
Well, shall I illuminate you?
Please.
Okay. Gem and the Holograms was one of those cartoons that existed in the 1980s solely to sell toys.
Oh, so have we covered how in the 1980s my parents had really strict TV controls?
I'm sure that we have, but we might as well restate it. But yeah. It's been so long since our last podcast. I'm sure people have forgotten all about us. They probably still think I'm the host of the show and not the star.
So, to reiterate, my parents had this comprehensive policy where you had half an hour of TV a day, and if you wanted more, you had to read for it.
Right.
And the part B of this comprehensive TV policy was no TV on Saturday mornings without our parents sitting down to watch with us.
Okay.
And so, the thing is my father was a very funny and very irreverent man, and the first time we actually tried to sit down and watch a half-hour program with him, he spent the entire time pointing out everything that was wrong with the program, making ruthless fun of every single one of the characters, and interjecting his own dialogue. Mm. And the experience was...
What was the show?
I think it was the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
Your Lisa's father ruins the cartoons.
He did.
So,
and the thing is at the time, my dad and his submarine crew were actually playing Dungeons and Dragons when they went out on sea trials. So he brought that into the whole thing too. And it turned into like a half hour lecture on why Tiamat wouldn't have behaved like she was behaving in the cartoons. And long story short,
good person would never behave that way.
Absolutely. And
oh boy.
Yeah, long story short, like my father, like it took him 3 weeks to break us. But once he did, like we never watched Saturday morning cartoons again.
That's a shame because Dungeons and Dragons was actually a pretty good cartoon.
Not from what I can remember.
No. Well, like of course I didn't have an older gentleman making fun of it while I was watching it.
Yeah.
My parents had no such policy. Just get out of our hair.
Yeah.
Watch this until your eyes fall out of your skull.
Oh, yeah.
But anyhow, Gem and the Holograms debuted in 1985. It is a product of the Hasbro Corporation, who already had the G.I. Joe cartoon and the Transformers.
Mm.
And they said, well, we need to sell some crap to girls.
We're not shaking down the ladies enough.
Yeah, we've got the boy money train going, so let's hit the ladies as well. And shall I read to you the plot of Gem and the Holograms?
I want to add that there is probably a longer plot to Gem and the Holograms than there are to several works of the Western canon on Wikipedia.
The Wikipedia entry is thorough.
This is the problem with Wikipedia, is when the users get to decide what's important.
It's clearly a Gem and the Hologram obsessive wrote this entry. I'm going to
do the streamlined
version. The series revolved around Gem, the mysterious lead singer of the rock group Gem and the Holograms. Her real name is Jerrica Benton.
So and this is basically like a pink-tinged Eddie and the Cruisers.
Yes. Yes. And Jerrica, not Gem, Jerrica. Is the owner and manager of Straight Music. So she was a record company executive.
Oh, Starlight Music, it says.
I read that as Straight Music.
I was like, that's awfully discriminatory.
Yes. sorry, clubs. No, we don't have any of that dance music stuff.
We want to make sure you don't play our music between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Yes. Starlight Music. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm reading it from a screen very far away. However, she adopted her persona with the help of a holographic computer known as Synergy, which was built by Jerrica's father to be, and I'm quoting here, the ultimate audio-visual entertainment synthesizer.
So this is what CNN used during the presidential elections?
Exactly, okay. That hologram that Will.i.am appeared on to tell you that Obama had won.
Can I just sidetrack here? I've never understood the allure of the hologram.
No.
And because I can remember seeing it in Star Wars as a kid and thinking, well, this is elaborately useless. It's a 2-foot-tall talking woman who blips over and over again. And when I saw the Hunger Games trailer for Hunger Games, Is This Thing Finally Over? They have like a traveling hologram generator that they pop up at inconvenient times. And all I could think is, we can't even get reliable cell phone reception half of the time. We're never going to get to the point where holograms are a thing.
Well,
but anyway, so to
let
get back
me tell
to
you, let me tell you why they're a thing here. Uh-huh. Well, disguised as Gem, Lisa,
yes,
Jerrica is able to move freely without restrictions, and on several occasions, other people have been in direct physical contact with her without disrupting the holographic projection. Gem, though, through the use of her earrings, is also able to project holograms around her and uses this ability throughout the series to avoid danger.
So she's basically Lady Gaga with the disguises, and the disguises are made from holograms. And I see that she has a sister named Kimber, of course.
Yes, she is the member. The holograms is also her backing group. They are the Pips to Gem's Gladys Knight.
I can't help but think that since her group consists of a younger sister, that there's like a League of Their Own thing going on.
Yes, there is. She's the keyboardist and main songwriter for the band.
Oh, dear.
They also have a couple other members who are childhood friends and adopted foster sisters of Jerrica.
Having lived with the Bentons. So now we're throwing in the Partridge Family. This is horrifying.
Yes. So that was the cartoon Gem and the Holograms.
We saw the movie preview and it looked just as bad because there's her dad's tinkering with holograms and then Juliette Lewis comes on and does her best Parker Posey impersonation.
We should point out in the movie Gem is a teenager or a tween or basically
she becomes YouTube famous.
Yeah. And she's a YouTube star. And in this case, the record executive is
Juliette Lewis.
Is it Juliet Lewis? Yes. Molly Ringwald is listed in the
as
thing.
As the aunt. Molly Ringwald is like the kindly mother figure who just, oh, now you kids be true to yourself. Ah. And Juliet Lewis is the voice of Cress Commerce. She's basically channeling the part that Parker Posey played back when this movie was called Josie and the Pussycats. And it had Tara Reid, that human anime doll, who was also in She's All That. And I think Rosario Dawson, who needed to pay some bills. So...
Well, the plot of Gem and the Holograms is a small-town girl catapults from underground video sensation to global superstar. Mm-hmm. She and her three sisters begin a journey of discovering that some talents are too special to keep hidden.
Okay. No, this is terrible. So, because the problem is anytime you think about a movie with four sisters, you know what I think of? Mm. Little Women.
No.
Yeah, I do.
Very few holograms in Little Women.
You know, there's that dystopic version coming up that dude from NCIS sold. Did you not know about this?
I think I knew about it on some level.
No, there's this... I think
more importantly, I didn't care, but go on, enlighten me.
No, one of the handsome meat sticks from one of the NCIS franchises sold...
Handsome meat stick. That is my favorite romantic comedy, Handsome Meat Stick.
Starring a handsome meat stick.
Yes.
So anyway, this handsome meat stick sold the idea of the four March sisters, but they're half-sisters now, and they're wandering around like the dystopic Philadelphia landscape.
Mm. So Philadelphia.
Yeah, I guess after a Flyers game.
Yes. Oh, man, the Eagles lost again. Come on, Joe, let's go.
Let's go break a water main open. Mm-hmm. So this is a thing that's actually coming to TV.
Right.
But I was thinking about this, and I sort of feel like Little Women as a movie tends to be something that pops out whenever America kind of needs a dose of self-identity, because we had it in the 90s, early 90s, with Winona Ryder and Susan Sarandon and a very young Kirsten Dunst.
Yes.
And Claire Danes. And then we also had a version with Katharine Hepburn and a couple of simps.
I have a Little Women story that we won't be telling on this podcast.
I got something like Little Women.
No, we did. Just you fill in the details, listeners. Yeah. Too many people who know me listen to this podcast.
So anyway, long story short, so basically Gem and the Holograms is Joe March and her sisters make a band.
Yeah.
And we saw
that there's learning and discovery, yeah, and holograms.
I saw this movie when it was called Josie and the Pussycats. And it
So you were the person who saw that.
Not in the theater, I hasten to add.
No.
I've seen it on cable, and I remember thinking that Parker Posey had surely had better things to do. This is before Kickstarter, though, when Parker Posey had to take jobs like this.
Sure.
But she was the one who pushed Josie and her pussycats away from whatever their grand artistic integrity was.
We're in cat ears and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Well, I'm sure it will be more of the same in this. Yeah. The question I had as we watched the trailer, and really, if you see the trailer, there is no need to see the movie, because the trailer...
Is the movie, basically.
Seems to go on for 90 minutes and outlines...
It was the longest thing I've ever saw.
Yeah, outlines everything that happens. It's the usual, hey, we're a band. Hey, we're famous now. Hey, we're having feuds. And you've got to remember that family is the most important thing of all.
Stay true to yourself, even though we've marketed you.
I'm Molly Ringwald and not Juliet Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that in the movie. Now, the question that I want to know is, why are they making it now? Because, again, Gem and the Holograms did not strike me as hugely popular.
I think it is among a certain cohort right under ours.
Okay.
And my impression...
Folks in their 30s who are now making making decisions.
And my other impression of this is they're like, well, the Hunger Games well is about to dry up. We better launch some other... Well, and they're like, you know, now that Miley Cyrus has become, you know, a grown adult in charge of her own self, we have to find some other malleable teen-friendly franchise that we can milk for a few years until the next big thing comes along.
Right.
I think the addition of, oh, it's a YouTube star is kind of laughable, because that's something that's going to date really fast. But
I can tell this story. Uh-huh. I was in Los Angeles. Uh-huh. This past week.
Like 3 days ago.
Yeah, 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. Testing cell phone networks for my day job, because surprisingly, producing podcasts that people get for free is...
Erratic podcasts.
Not as lucrative a career as you might imagine, so
you mean this erratically produced thing where we just talk about whatever we feel like isn't raking in the money?
No, not really at all.
I feel like you've been misleading me.
Yeah, there's no advertising. We never get to do ad reads on this show, which disappoints me to no end.
No.
Because I would be an awesome ad reader.
Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in LA, and I had to go to Hollywood Boulevard, which is the possibly the worst place in all of the United States, I would wager.
No, I would argue. Have you been to Winnemucca, Nevada yet?
No, but.
All right, so we'll have to
go there. But tourists don't descend upon Winnemucca, Nevada, whereas they do descend upon Hollywood Boulevard and the Man's Chinese Theater there. And there's all the horrible people dressed in costumes, some as minions now, to bring this full circle.
Yeah. Oh, there's a really depressing documentary about those people,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. And as I was going to my car, the guy dressed as Thor and the guy who dressed as Captain America were having a heart-to-heart.
Oh.
It might be the next plot of The Avengers, where they just stand on the staircase of the Hollywood parking garage and argue
talk about their
things.
Feelings. Yeah.
So
Captain America 3, I have feelings.
Yes. Yeah. Work with me, Marvel Pictures. So I was driving back on back to the airport via Sunset Boulevard, which was a mistake traffic-wise. But
I think people who don't ever go to Los Angeles won't give a crap about the traffic. So let's just move to the point of your story.
Fine. When I lived there in the 90s, there was a billboard that advertised adult movies.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the when adult movies were trying to be all cinematic, and we're making an epic pirate movie, and also there'll be people having sex, so enjoy.
Yarr!
Yeah, and now that billboard advertises YouTube stars, and I think that sort of is trading like for like.
I don't think you're wrong, but we're not. This is not a podcast called Lisa and Phil Have Strong Opinions About What Is Appropriate on YouTube and What Is Not.
No, not at all.
An even more erratically produced podcast than this one. I think that to get back to the Gem and the Holograms thing.
Why they're making it.
Yeah, I think, like you said, the people who are now making decisions about greenlighting movies are a few years younger than we are, so this is their nostalgia button. I also think that studios are like, if we can get tween girls in here, this is a license to print money.
Yeah.
And like I said, Miley Cyrus has grown up and become a person in charge of her own image, and they can no longer pull the, oh, look, when she puts on a wig, she's an ordinary person, but then she's Hannah Montana. What is the dumbest con since the Patty Duke show?
But Patty Duke wasn't a con.
They're cousins.
They were identical cousins.
They walked alike. They talked alike.
Sometimes they even.
No, it was the dumbest thing ever. Where I was like, by that point, DNA had been discovered. Like Gregor Mendel had done the inherited traits. Everybody knew how it worked, and they still tried this identical cousins business.
But you're acting like they're trying to.
They share 12.5% of their DNA. There's no way they're going to be alike.
Well, they weren't alike because one of them was sort of a tomboy, and one of them was more of a pretty princess type. So that's how they were different.
So you're arguing for epigenetic inheritance, where people's genetic expression is shaped by the personality traits of their parents.
If that's a word you didn't just make up, yes, that's what I am arguing for. No, I will not have you disparage the motives of the Patty Duke show. They were just, you know, cousins having a wild time, and people lost their mind.
Oh, I hope someone makes a movie about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I once was watching a news program, and they interviewed a guy named Donald Christ, who I thought was I imagined him as
disappointed younger brother,
Jesus's younger identical brother or identical cousin.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ has been everywhere, from the Gaza Strip to Herod's Square, but Donald's only seen the heights from way on top of Golan Heights. What a crazy pair, cause they're cousins, identical cousins, and you'll find.
So I was thinking maybe
they walk alike, they talk alike, sometimes they change water into wine alike.
No.
You will lose your mind.
First of all, it's Donald Christ, and he would change it into juice boxes because he's Jesus' disappointing relative.
Okay, that's true. We've really need to workshop this a little bit more.
What is this we? Keep us happy.
Well, again, with the Marvel people, don't call for that movie about
Captain America
talking on a stairwell with Thor for like an hour. It's just them talking for an hour. It's kind of a two-hander.
It would basically, like, Chris and Chris Work It Out would be the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just them. As long as they do it shirtless, I think Marvel has a summer blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, Gem and the Holograms, don't see it.
No.
Don't take your kids to see it. Don't feed the Hasbro beast, which has already given us 4 Transformer movies.
And Megan Fox.
2 G.I. Joe
movies. And Shia LaBeouf.
And The Rock in the G.I. Joe movies.
Well, that's the problem, is I have to defend The Rock by...
No, you don't.
I
Not
do.
For that.
Oh, God.
Not for that. He makes bad decisions.
I would love to know who's making the Rock's decisions, because he should be in better stuff than he's in.
Mm.
And that extends to his stint on...
His terrible HBO show.
Well, that's the HBO show where, like, the pitch was clearly, what if it's Entourage only with people who are even more entitled?
Yeah.
And so I was like, you're right. That's what America needs right now.
People like Entourage. They really don't. But stay with me on this. Maybe if we gave them more Entourage, only with athletes instead of movie stars.
Yeah, that's... No.
No, it's... So, yeah, that's what I... You saw a movie. I went to the theater.
I did. It's very exciting. It was very exciting. I went to see Ant-Man.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Okay, so I've seen 4 movies this summer, which, again, very exciting for me. Or I should say I've seen 4 movies in the cinema, and I've seen countless on Netflix.
I have seen 1 movie in the theater, Minions, and I, on my flight back...
Oh, I didn't even count Minions, and so 5. I've seen 5 in the theater.
Well, good for you.
Yes.
One more, and you get a free Subway sandwich.
Do I? I hate Subway.
And the only other movie I saw was on the flight back from... where I was.
Was that Seattle? Or?
This was from Seattle. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of traveling this past week.
Mm-hmm.
The guy next to me was watching Interstellar on his iPad.
That's where Matthew McConaughey is, the time-traveling...
Time-traveling dad.
As opposed to Matthew McConaughey is the sanctimonious twerpy priest, while Jodie Foster goes time-traveling through space.
Correct.
Okay. Just making sure I have my Matthew McConaughey space opera set.
Since it's only a 2-hour flight, we only got about a third of the way through Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
But I was supplying my own dialogue for it. And I think it was probably better than Christopher Nolan and his brother came up with. Mostly, every time Matthew McConaughey was on the screen, I kept going, the great thing about the Lincoln Continental is that you can fly it into space. It's a ride back into time,
you really don't like Christopher Nolan movies, though.
I liked one of the Batman movies. Yeah. I liked 1.5 of the Batman movies.
Yeah.
And,
but one of them disturbed you and disgusted you so much you swore off of superhero movies.
Yes, which brings us back full circle to Ant-Man, which I did not see.
Which I think you need to go see it with me. Okay, here's my case.
I'm a man of strong conviction, so convince me.
Okay, here's my case for why you should see Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I know that one of your big objections to superhero movies is the whole scale destruction of cities with no consequence.
Yep. Not entertaining to me.
So what these 8,000 screenwriters who worked on Ant-Man did. No, seriously, like the writing credits are practically longer than the movie. What the 8,000 screenwriters who worked on this movie did said, fine, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make all of these big cinematic set battles ant-sized.
Mm-hmm.
And so literally the only things that get destroyed are a mock-up of a corporate campus.
Cool.
And a train set.
Okay. You got me.
So those are the big epics, and so that's one reason to see it. Second reason to see it: it is funny.
Oh,
and that has been something that's been really missing from Marvel movies. Because I will go to the mat by saying I don't think either of the Avengers movies is that funny. There are some moments that have levity, but both movies are meant to be big epic tentpoles where you take the MCU super seriously.
I saw the first Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the only man in America who didn't care for it at all.
Yeah.
And I didn't find it all that funny or witty.
It's not that funny. Yeah. And Guardians of the Galaxy was a funny movie.
Guardians of the Galaxy is a very funny movie.
And
I enjoyed that one.
This is as funny as Guardians of the Galaxy.
But that also had the advantage of being set in space, so you don't have the wholesale...
Well, this brings me to the third reason you should watch this movie, mm-hmm. which is... it is set in a completely different milieu than the rest of the Marvel cinema. Because if you take a look at the previous entries in the canon, the Captain Americas, the Iron Mans, and the Avengers, which I'm going to argue are pretty much everything that's non-Guardian the Galaxy, all of them have the distortion effect of the Stark family billions all over them. It's all about, here are billionaires who do things. Here are billionaires who underwrite a super soldier project. Here are billionaires who put on big iron suits and whisk around the globe to do their thing. You have no fewer than, let's see, 3 Iron Man movies, 2 Captain America movies, and 2 Avenger movies, so that's 7.
And 2 Thor movies.
Okay, which because Thor is a prince and comes from lots of money. Like, you have no fewer than 9 Marvel movies. You have, listen to me, you have no fewer than 9 Marvel movies where everybody is super friggin' rich.
I really didn't realize that Thor was well off in terms of Asgardian wealth. What does the Asgardian currency translate to in U.S. dollars?
It translates into, we have superior firepower and staffs that can turn you into lizards.
It is very good that this is not a video podcast, because the looks you're shooting me right at this moment, the viewers would recoil. It's winter time. It may be summer on the calendar, but it's winter time where we're recording this podcast.
It sure is.
Why don't you continue? There's all these... Yeah. Your point is there's all these Marvel movies.
So there are literally 9...
Featuring rich boys.
Yeah, rich boys who... Oh, it's nice that they find a purpose in life. It's good. It's the idle richer repellent. So... You know, hooray, they get self-actualized. So this movie is about a dude who is broke, mostly because he got out of prison. Nobody will hire him for anything. And, you know, his back is against the wall financially. And a lot of it is about him scraping by. And to come from the other side of the equation, where he does, like, eventually have to buddy up with, again, a crazy tech billionaire. But crazy tech billionaire has been pushed out of his own company and is not really interested in doing anything except talking to ants. And it's an inversion of the scale of the previous movies that I found really warm and human in a way. And speaking of inversion of scale, in a lot of these Marvel movies, people have father issues. Like, Thor has issues with his dad, and Iron Man has issues with his dad, and the whole reason the Hulk exists is because Bruce Banner has issues with his dad. And in this movie, it's the heart of the movie are two fathers who are fighting to earn their daughter's love.
Mm-hmm.
And to stay in their daughters' lives as worthwhile people. And it's nice to see that approach taken as opposed to, my daddy didn't love me enough, here is my reactor. So it was nice to see it for that. And finally, within the first 25 minutes of the movie, more people of color had actual speaking lines and effect on the plots than in, like, again, the previous 9 Marvel movies that we've seen.
Mm.
And it was nice to see a movie that seemed to be set in a more... And I hesitate to say this about a movie that, again, features a shrinking dude who talks to ants. But it was nice to see a movie that had more humanistic grounding and pointed out that, you know, if you're going to be in a world where people like the Avengers exist, like, there are still folks who are hustling to get the bills paid and who care a whole heck of a lot more about their family problems than they do anything else, and are operating on a very human scale. It brings a touch of humanity back to the Marvel franchise. And, you know, I remember I saw the Avengers earlier this year, and I was really put off by the whole Team America wholesale destruction of it all.
Yep.
And I would argue that this movie is a really refreshing antidote to that.
Well, then.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll give it a try.
Yeah, like I said, because Paul Rudd plays Scott Lang, who's the Ant-Man, and he ends up with a crew of, like, 3 other guys backing him up on his heists, and one of the dudes is, like, an impenetrable Russian hacker, but the other two are Latino and Black. The only Avenger who pops in for a cameo is Falcon, who again is Black. There's a whole crew of Latinos who basically work as an informal gossip line through San Francisco, which I would add is actually one of the more accurate representations of the Bay Area, because one of my big complaints about any TV show or movie set in the San Francisco Bay Area is they always pretend it's, you know, hey, it's Caucasian paradise. I'm like, no, I live here. It's not like that at all. Mm-hmm. We're fairly diverse. And this is a movie that actually shows a more accurate ethnic makeup of San Francisco. None of the bridges get blown up.
Oh, that's nice.
The main action, when they finally do have a big conflagration, it takes place on Treasure Island.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did they get to Treasure Island?
Very carefully.
Yeah.
No, they have a helicopter.
Oh,
so.
Well, that helps.
Corey Stoll is great as the villain, and he's like a dead ringer for Jeff Bezos, so my sincere hope is that when they make the Jeff Bezos movie, they just call up Corey Stoll and say, you've got the job.
Okay.
And what I like about it is it actually calls the Avengers Age of Ultron movie on its crap constantly in like background Easter eggs and stuff like that, too.
Give an example.
The first example is...
ruining it for people
yes,
who haven't seen
when
it.
Michael Douglas outlines what he wants Scott Lang to do with the tiny Ant-Man suit and why he has to do it, you know, Paul Rudd, who is playing Scott Lang, listens very soberly and says, all right, here's what I think our first step is. We call the Avengers. And Michael Douglas, like, gives this epic eye roll and says, no, they're too busy dropping countries out of the sky to bother with something like this. And it was just this really dismissive. You can tell he completely disagreed with how it happened. What kind of world do we live in where people can just blithely pick up fake European countries and fling them into the air?
Not If you're going to pick up a country, pick up a real country.
Latvia.
Yeah, Latveria.
Latveria is another made-up
one. I know. There was a review of the Fantastic Four where someone, instead of saying that Dr. Doom came from Latveria, said they came from Latvia.
Oh, my goodness.
And I nearly became that guy where, sir, he is from Latveria.
You know, you realize I love the Fantastic Four.
I know that you do.
I do. I love the comics, and the movies have always been craptacular, and I realize...
All of them.
And, you know, go ahead and get it out of your system now. You've already aired your grievances in other podcasts.
I don't want to repeat myself. These have not been good movies.
I think it's because it's a TV show. But anyway, the movie I really want to see is the one from Dr. Doom's perspective, where he's just trying to run Latveria as a self-sufficient nation.
We've mentioned this on the podcast before.
It's my dream.
Our dream of Dr. Doom.
He's like, I'm just trying to run Latveria as a self-sufficient nation. We're trying to reduce our overall carbon footprint. We don't want to contribute to climate change. We don't want to contribute to the hegemony of unmonitored mutants and superheroes and things like that. We don't want part of this realpolitik. And everyone's like, no! And like this poor guy fighting.
Maybe it can also be a series where Kingpin's just a guy trying to run a business.
Yeah.
And
well, that is kind of what happens in Daredevil, to be honest. Like, you have tremendous sympathy for Kingpin throughout the Netflix Daredevil. It's really a great series.
Red Skull is just, you know, I'm just trying to marshal some troops. I'm just trying to get some
that
guys.
Red horse is out of the barn already. Okay. But, you know, I just feel...
Thanos is,
But it was nice because there are a bunch of subtle slams on you know, the Avengers and how, and I thought, well, that's great because it's about time that people were like, look, you know, we have folks who run around and commit mayhem and... Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many people that Luther Corps employs?
Mm-hmm.
And Superman would put them all out on the street if he could by smashing Lex Luthor. You know, who is a job creator? Is it the guy flying around in his underwear?
Well, Lex Luthor was president of the U.S. for a while, and he had a pretty comprehensive economic reform policy.
No good.
So there you go.
Well,
yeah.
There we are.
Mm-hmm. More capitalism in comics. There we go.
More movies about villains is what we're saying.
Well, I'm just saying
from their perspective.
Change the perspective.
It's the wide Sargasso Sea of superhero movies.
Look, I think one of the problems in the Marvelverse, and this movie actually went a little way towards addressing it, one of the problems is that you're supposed to be okay with these, again, billionaires doing whatever they want without consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because, oh, it's great. They're nice billionaires with suits. Like, you know, and they managed to take care of the not-so-nice billionaires with suits. And, like, again, I would love to know what kind of world economy the Marvel Cinematic Universe has if every jerk store who runs a Fortune 500 corporation is also either a superhero or a supervillain, because that's how it's shaping up to be. So this movie brings it back to a more human scale, which I think was pretty badly needed as a corrective. I think the movie suffered from bad word of mouth because there was a lot of anticipatory press and people freaked out when Edgar What's-His-Face left.
Edgar Winter?
No, that's like a rock star.
It is. I would say Edgar...
He's the Cornetto Trilogy guy.
I know who he is.
Yeah.
I'm going to call him Edgar Winter from now on.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, that hurts me when you do that.
Feed my Frankenstein.
Yeah,
oh wait, no, that's Alice Cooper. Shoot.
But there's a lot of the, oh, this is terrible. Edgar Wright. Oh, this is terrible. This is obviously in trouble, blah, blah, blah. And I think you can see fingerprints of the movie he would have made because it has a little bit of a Hot Fuzz feel to it where they're playing with the genre. But then Adam McKay, who's done the Anchorman movies, came in and did some writing on it too and made it looser and funnier and a very loving send-up of a lot of superhero conventions that these Marvel movies have been perpetuating. And so that's why I think you go see it, is you go see it to remind yourself what you actually like about what is turning into a very long and complicated cinematic universe.
Mm.
I mean, we're 10 movies into this thing, for God's sake.
And what, only halfway through?
I think so.
Yeah. It's a long slog.
It is. And I got mansplained in the audience, which I thought was delightful.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't mention that.
Well, because it was just so silly. Some stupid boy comes up to me and goes, you know, you have to stay through the credits to see other scenes. And I'm like, really? Yes, this is my first outing in a Marvel film, and I've never been on the internet. Do tell me more. Could you please? Should I watch the credits, or do I just listen? Do I need special glasses?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
How old was this youngster?
Early 20s.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for all I know, maybe like it was his internet support groups. Today is the day you talk to a real girl.
Talk to a girl and tell her things.
Yeah.
She'll like the knowledge that you pass on.
Yeah.
Hey, fellas.
Yeah. You know, that's the winner. That's the... I know who those people are in the club. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Fellas, go to a movie and explain things to girls.
They love it.
They love it.
Yeah.
Go to Gem and the Holograms and tell them all about
I think if you told 20-something cartoon. I think if you told 20-something men to go hang out at Gem and the Holograms, you'd have a lot of things on a police blotter.
Well, all the more reason.
No.
So I want to say to our listeners out there who are in their 20s and male, go to Gem and the Holograms.
No, please
and just,
don't.
No, please
don't, do. Don't tell anybody that we told you to do this.
And,
I'm not backing this idea.
And before everything you say, hey there, little lady.
This is why, you know why our marriage works?
Yeah.
We met over the internet.
Yeah.
You didn't meet me in a movie theater.
No. Well, actually... The shark represents...
Oh, my gosh. It's a mystery why I haven't yet seen a gravestone that has just the words, well, actually. And then, oh, there's the cause of death.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ant-Man had a couple previews with it, too.
Did it?
It did.
What were they?
Well, one of them was the Star Wars preview, which was the same one that's been on the internet now for forever.
Yeah.
And I still can't stop snickering in the middle of it, because you see the set of hands picking up, like, the melted Darth Vader mask, and all I can imagine is, a Death Star wouldn't melt a mask like that. And so I'm really hoping this movie includes, like, a Darth Vader truther.
Kenobi did the Death Star. Yeah.
Sure. You know, the Ewoks were in on it as fundamental. I really hope that
the Ewoks did 9/11. Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, so there's this, of course, and and Han Solo
creeps
onto the
screen.
They're
going to do Star Wars World at Disneyland.
Oh, good for them.
Well, I was hoping that they were going to replace the craptacular Mickey's Toontown, which is based on Roger Rabbit, which is a movie that does not hold up at all.
Oh, we saw it
last year. Yeah.
It was horrifying.
Yeah, they showed that, and we watched that, and Good Morning Vietnam back-to-back, and we should call that the things you liked in the 80s that you thought were good are not really that good film festival.
Well, it's interesting because it makes you realize that, you know how there's the idea of ambient noise and you get used to different levels of noise?
Yeah.
I would say there's kind of an ambient aesthetic, and you get used to good special effects simply because we've seen them for so many years now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we went through that awful period in the 90s with CGI children's cartoons and stuff like that.
Right.
But you have to admit that even on TV, there's a level of visual sophistication to almost everything at this point where people just kind of expect it to be seamless and you to not think, oh, look, somebody blew their budget on a rendering machine. Mm. You know, it's... much.
So Star Wars, and they're doing the Star Wars land.
Yeah.
What other trailers?
I saw the trailer for the last Hunger Games movie, which just looks like a joyless slog. And I should add the book number 3 in that series, which is, oh God, Mockingjay, I think it was called?
No, Mockingjay, I don't...
Okay, so
I'm correcting you, and yet I don't even know.
The first one is Hunger Games, the second one is called Catching Fire, because, you know, the country's catching fire or whatever. And then the third one is called Mockingjay, I believe.
I thought they had already done Mockingjay.
They're doing it as a two-parter, with the stupid...
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is the third book is a joyless slog, and she does terrible things to characters, and it's just a terrible... It's basically like how not to write the third book in a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, that's why you turn the terrible third book into two movies, and the second one just looks... I really hope that every actor is like, I took this part because there's a big paycheck and because I hear that Jennifer Lawrence is a hell of a lot of fun to hang around with. Because otherwise it just looks bleak and dystopic in like a 1980s rock video sort of way where everyone has big puffy sleeves and asymmetrical hair and there's like smoke in the background and people look serious while music plays and I just... No, I can't.
I would watch a movie about a dystopian future that features 1980s bands.
Well, we should just have you watch like the Wild Boys video from Duran Duran because I watched this preview for the Hunger Games and I was like, I think I've seen this. This is like a Duran Duran concert from 1985. You know, Simon Le Bon's eyeliner is running and Nick Rhodes is looking sallow behind the keyboards and stuff blows up.
Damn Yankees are there and Warrant.
Yeah. Jacko with a Y. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Hunger Games thing, and the thing is, I took my niece to see the first one, and we were very excited when stuff got adapted, and you know, the problem with that series also is the casting.
Yeah.
Because, and mind you, Jennifer Lawrence is great because it's Jennifer Lawrence. She's great in everything. But, like, and of course, it's dystopia, but she's torn between two guys because girls, that's what they think about, I guess. And in the book, like, the dude that she ends up doing the Hunger Games with and all the things, is he's a baker's son. And she repeatedly describes that he's enormous and a wrestler. And he's played in the movies by Josh Hutcherson, who's a gifted thespian, but you would never, ever describe him as hulking. Like, honestly, in the Hunger Games, it looks like Jennifer Lawrence could, like, stick him in a baby Bjorn and run around and successfully win the games. So...
Stick him in a baby Bjorn.
Yes, he'd have his little arms and legs hanging out. And just kind of, Katniss, watch out for that. So, you know, the thing
again,
is...
Again, you're improving the movie, so yeah, I can't really fault you.
Yeah, so the thing is the books, it's like, oh, I have to choose between these two strapping men, and oh, whatever will I do? And in the movies, it's, here's my inamorata in a baby Bjorn, and then here's... Thor's younger brother, like one of the Hemsworths, because there's like a bunch of them, and they're all frightfully good-looking. Like, Australia just keeps exporting good-looking Hemsworths, and they exported one for the express purpose of this movie. And you're like, how is this even a choice? Like, you could just assume that he could adopt your baby Bjorn game partner, and you could be like an unconventional Look Who's Talking family, where the baby's talking. Like, so I can't accept the movie on that premise alone. And now you add the dystopic 1980s rock video element to it, and it's just, I can't even with it, as the kids say. I can't even.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, those are the ones I remember watching, I'm sure there were others, but I didn't write them down this time.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah. Oh, there was one more, but we're saving it for a future podcast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think
you go see Ant-Man with me.
I think I will, and we're reaching the age where our daughter is beginning to like things.
Yeah.
And I think the reason the Gem and the Holograms trailer struck a chord with me is because, oh God, she's going to start liking terrible things.
Yeah.
Because that's already sort of begun, things that I can barely sit through that she wants to watch.
Like, our daughter likes the movie Funny Face.
Well, that is okay. No, yeah. That's all right. It's the Angelina Ballerina was.
She watched one episode of that
because I won't have it.
And then we told her Netflix was broken. Yes. And she believed us. That was the great thing.
Angelina Ballerina was eaten by a cat. It's a mouse who does ballet, and she is the worst.
Well, I have a girlfriend who actually blocked the Disney channels and the Nickelodeon channels in her house because she knows that when her kid watched those TV shows, she got especially mouthy, since those TV shows, the entire premise is children are funded by invisible parents whom they can boss around at will.
Exactly.
And that's not happening.
Yeah.
So.
No.
No, we'll just keep her weird.
The aforementioned niece used to watch iCarly.
Oh,
and that was a dreadful half hour of entertainment beamed into your home.
Yeah.
About a smart-mouthed kid who needed the back of a hand like I need another glass of bourbon.
You don't need another glass of bourbon, sweetheart.
Yeah. But... So
yeah, we'll just keep our daughter under the impression that Fred Astaire is the
I making her watch the old movies so that she thinks that movies stopped being made in 1963.
Realistically speaking, like you said, at some point she's going to go see crappy movies. I went to see Howard the Duck in the theaters when I was a teenager.
Wow, you were the one.
I brought a book, and I remember being so disgruntled like 10 minutes into it that I found like the spot in the theater with the dim emergency light, and I sat underneath that emergency light and read the book because I was just so furious at my friends for picking that movie.
Every now and again, there's like an attempt to say, oh, this movie that is bad, it's not as bad as you think it is.
It's
actually quite good. No one has ever tried to do that with Howard the Duck because that is a terrible motion picture. Yeah. I saw it on videotape.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And it is not... It is not a fun experience.
No, what's going to happen with our daughter is the same thing that happens to almost every moviegoer, which is where you go with your friends to see a movie, and you sit halfway through, and you think, I like my friends, but they have terrible taste in movies.
Yep.
Or, like, you have the experience of walking out of a movie, and they're gushing over it, and you're like, did we just see the same movie? You know, it's that's going to happen to her.
Yep.
You know.
And when it does...
We'll be there.
We'll be there to say, you should have listened to us.
No, we can't say that.
Because we would have ruined that movie for you before you had even seen it.
We probably will be ruining it. She may go see movies out of spite. My mom podcasted about it. God, I have to go see it now.
Mm-hmm. And by the time she's of that age, we'll have put two more episodes, three more episodes, given the schedule we publish at.
I think that's ambitious, but doable.
Okay.
And I think this is enough. I want to thank you all for your time and attention. We love hearing from you on Twitter.
Yes.
And it makes my day when you guys let us know that you've been paying attention.
It's very nice. The people who listen, it's great because they recently did a promo on the Incomparable.
Uh-huh.
And they mentioned all the podcasts that are part of the Incomparable Network, save for one.
Who's?
Ours.
What?
Yeah. We're living in the basement.
We're
Daddy's chubby little secret that he doesn't talk about.
We're like the Diary of Desmond Pfeffer or whatever it was. Oh, that's terrible.
Didn't mention us.
Oh,
well. Oh, we've got lots of great podcasts. We got that Doctor Who thing and that Star Trek thing, because those
actually update regularly. Let's be fair, if we did this on a more regular basis,
the British guy who talks about things that people like, if we did
our podcasts on a more regular basis, perhaps we could earn a spot.
A lot of game show podcasts that people like.
Because they're produced regularly.
And some other things that other people do about ruining movies.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to mention them.
Anyway, we love it when you tweet at us.
We love it.
And thank you so much for listening. We hope that we can live up to your attention and do this on a more regular basis. With you at the end of this episode, I am, as always, Lisa Schmeiser.
I'm the star of the show, Philip Michaels.
Black Dwarf. Collapsing in on his own gravitational horse.
That's me.